नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामुदीरयत् नास्ति प्रेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भगवतः सेवया Bhagavat-yutama-shloke Bhakti-bhavati-naishtiki Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Reading today from Canto 4, Chapter 3 and 31, entitled Narada Instructs the Prachetas, and reading today from text number 8. Maitreya Ruvacha Iti Prachetasam Prishtaha Bhagavan Naradaha Munihi Bhagavati Uttamashloke Avishta Atma Abravit Nripan Maitreya Uvacha Iti Prachetasan Prishto Bhagavan Narada Munihi Bhagavat Yutama Shloka Avishtatma Bravinripan Maitreya Ruvacha Maitreya said, Iti Thus, Prachetasam, by the Prachetas, Prishtaha, being asked, Bhagavan, the great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Naradaha, Narada, Munihi, very thoughtful, Bhagavati, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttamashloke, possessing excellent renown, Avishta, absorbed, Atma, whose mind, Abravit, replied, Nripan, to the kings. Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, being thus petitioned by the Prachetas, the supreme devotee Narada, who is always absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, began to reply. Please repeat. The great sage Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, being thus petitioned by the Prachetas, the supreme devotee Narada, who is always absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, began to reply. Purport. In this verse, Bhagavan Narada indicates that Narada is always absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavatyutama shloke avishtatma. Narada has no other business than thinking of Krishna, talking of Krishna, and preaching about Krishna. Therefore, he is sometimes called Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who possesses all opulence. When a person possesses Bhagavan within his heart, he is also sometimes called Bhagavan. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, Shakshat Hari Tvena Samasta Shastrai. In every Shastra, the spiritual master is accepted directly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This does not mean that the spiritual master or a saintly person like Narada has actually become the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is accepted in this way because he possesses the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart constantly. As described here, Abhishtatma, when one is simply absorbed in the thought of Krishna, one is also called Bhagavan. Bhagavan possesses all opulence. If one possesses Bhagavan within his heart always, does he not automatically possess all opulence also? In that sense, a great devotee like Narada can be called Bhagavan. However, we cannot tolerate that a rascal or imposter is called Bhagavan. One must possess either all opulences or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, who possesses all opulences. Maitreya Ruvacha Iti Prachetasam Prishto Bhagavan Narado Munihi Bhagavat Yutama Shloka Avishnatma Bravin Nirpan. The great sage Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, being thus petitioned by the Prachetas, the supreme devotee Narada, who is always absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, began to reply. Omagyana tamarandasa dinandinan shalakaya chakshuru militang dena tasmaishi guruve namaha. Panchakalpa turubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha paditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Seems to be a bit of a tension here. On one hand, Srila Prabhupada is rather critical, to say the least, of those who call themselves Bhagavan, and suggests that the word Bhagavan be reserved for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And on the other hand, here we find an instance in the 31st chapter of the 4th canto where a devotee is indeed addressed as Bhagavan. So how are we to understand this? And Srila Prabhupada gives an explanation in this purport. Srila Prabhupada was very strong in criticizing those who call themselves Bhagavan. In my era as a student, there was one guru called Bhagavan Rajneesh. Have you heard of him? I thought so. Passed away some years ago. Got a mixed reputation, we could say. he was well known for having, I think it was 93 Rolls Royces. Srila Prabhupada gives an explanation why he could have a Rolls Royce, but we could come back to that here, because it's relevant. Actually, that discussion is relevant. There's also another guru called Kalki Bhagavan, probably taking account of people's impatience to wait for the end of Kali Yuga. Quite often, those who follow the Vedic tradition or the Hindu tradition kind of object to this 432,000 years for Kali Yuga, because generally speaking, those time spans tend to stretch our imagination a little bit. And they often try and shorten those time periods. Actually, they say they're not literally true, but the periods given for the Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga are different than actually given in Shastra. And obviously Kalki Bhagavan, I think, would actually submit to that same philosophy, considering according to Shastra we've got roughly another 27,000 years to go, yes. So he was born in 1949. He's the founder of a spiritual movement, I think, called Spiritual Oneness, and got other names like the Foundation for World Awakening. But there's been some controversy about him as well. But of course, we understand that actually, when Kalki comes, he won't come with his wife, but will come on a horseback with a sword. And at that time, the human population will have degenerated so much that they will be very, very short, of a kind of grey complexion, and they will be eating their own children, apparently. So very, very degraded. Therefore, the Lord comes simply with a sword, and he chops off their heads. How do you like that? Good, huh? Exciting. What do you think? That's the real Kalki avatar. There are numerous others we know about, certain gurus and so on, who claim to be God. And Srila Prabhupada criticized them. Some of them are called Bhagavan, but the meaning of Bhagavan is given here. It's close approximation, really, is God. Regrettably, many of the books that talk about the Hindu tradition contain statements like this one, and this was sent to me. It's a children's school book on Hinduism, and it was sent to me by a publisher in Oxford, and they asked me to edit the book, which was quite a horrifying experience, I can tell you. And it says here, Hindus call God, the ultimate reality, Brahman. I've never heard a single Hindu call God Brahman. It's a philosophical term, which really means the supreme or the absolute truth, differentiated from matter, which is temporary. But you never hear anyone referring to God as Brahman. Has anyone heard that? Hindu person talking about, you know, generally the word is Bhagavan, very, very common word, even in other traditions. Bhagavan, occasionally the word Ishvara is used, particularly by the Shaivas, the controller. And also we have the word Deva, which means God. We tend to translate it as demigod. Literally it's God. Even in our own Shastra somewhere, Krishna is called, I'm not sure, someone could help me out here, Deva Deva. God of gods. Krishna's, is it in the Gita? Yeah, Deva Deva in the Gita. Thank you. Yeah, so he's God of gods, the supreme person, in other words, the supreme deity. So the word Brahman actually is not really equivalent to God. Rather, the word Bhagavan tends to be more consistent with the idea of God as used in the West, and particularly for those who believe in a personal manifestation of God. The literal meaning of the word is given to us by Parashara Muni, another Muni. Notice how it says, what is the meaning of Muni? Yes, very, very thoughtful person. That means about spiritual life, we need to be thoughtful. Srila Prabhupada mentions somewhere in the Bhagavatam that a devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. That means we actually do apply our mind to Krishna and trying to understand Shastra. Therefore, it's not speculative, but it is thoughtful. O thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam. So Muni, another Muni. There's a quote here. Srila Prabhupada explains. This is from a lecture in Auckland, February the 21st, 1973. Were you born in 1973? No. Oh, some of us were, yes. Actually, I joined ISKCON in 1973. This was in Auckland. It was on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 9. The word Bhagavan is very significant. Bhaga means opulence. Actually, that word Bhaga, I think it's come down to some of the Slavic languages. In Bulgaria, Bog, the word Bog, I think. Does anyone speak any of the Slavic languages here? Where are you from, Prabhu? Bog also. Yeah, Bog, the same, yeah. In Bulgaria, I know it's Bog also. So it seems to come from Bog. There was a group of Christians known as the Bogomils. Which means, I think, what's the translation of that? Literally, those dear to God, Bogomil, dear to God. So even they say that the word Baghdad in Iraq, it comes from Baga. Yeah. So, and Van means, what does Van mean? Yeah, one who possesses. There are lots of Vans. Shridavan, one who possesses faith. Gyanavan. What's the verse with Gyanavan in it? Gyanavan. What's the first verse? After Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Man Prapadite. Yeah. After many births, one who is in knowledge surrenders unto me. Mamupich. Yes. Bhagavan. There's also a similar word, Bhagyavan. Another verse comes to mind. Bhagyavan. Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadi by Lata Bhakti Lata Bhish. One who's possessed. What does Bhagya mean? Bhagya. Fortune. Yeah, fortune. Great fortune. In astrology, the ninth house is called the house of Bhagya. Good fortune. So Bhagyavan, one who's possessed of good fortune. So Van means one who possesses. Bhaga means all opulence. So that the literal meaning is one who possesses all opulence. Hence, it also means God, because he's the possessor of all opulence. Ahang savasya prabhavo. I am the source of everything. Does anyone have a Gita? Would you get me a Gita? Let's read those verses. Because the important point here is that because there is opulence in this world, thank you. Let's read those verses. Two of the four seed verses, 10.8, 10.9, 10.10 and 10.11. Ahang sarvasya prabhavo mataksa vang pravartate iti matva bhujante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Do you know that verse? What's your name, by the way? Radhisham. You know that verse, Radhisham. Could you let us know the translation of that verse? Do you know the translation? You don't, but you know the Sanskrit. Why, you're a real scholar. Goodness, you know the Sanskrit, but don't know the English. I'll read the English for you, okay? I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this, you know it quite well, because you know the Sanskrit, yeah. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Actually, it was the previous verse I was thinking of. 10.7. This 10th chapter is called The Opulence of the Absolute. It's all about Krishna's opulence. His Aishvarya. Etang vibhuting yogam cha mama yoveti tatvataha savikalpena yogena yunjite nacha sangshaya. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So just by knowing of Krishna's opulence, understanding that opulence, one automatically engages in devotional service, which is why we hear of the opulence of that Supreme Person, Shishi Radha Gopinath. That's why we hear of how he created. Why are we hearing about creation of the world? Why he made all these universes, why there are many universes, how they're repeatedly created, how Lord Brahma emanates from Vishnu atop the lotus flower, how Lord Brahma creates. Why are we hearing? What's the reason? Because actually we're interested in not just Gyan, but we're interested in Vigyan, practical knowledge. Real. It has to have some purpose knowledge. It's not just abstract. So why are we learning about the creation of the universe? Radhesha. You want to become Lord Brahma? You don't? Why not? He's a big man. Four heads. Yeah, we're not interested in becoming Lord Brahma, so why are we learning about Krishna's opulence? Here it's mentioned. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. It enhances our bhakti when we realize how great the Supreme Personality of God is. Ahang Savasya Prabhavo, I am the source of everything. Therefore, philosophically, we should understand this. Whatever is in the emanation is in the source. If we want to test the purity of some water, say a river, because the rivers are often polluted, we cannot test the water in the entire river, but we take a drop of that water. By analyzing that drop, one understands whether the water is polluted. What would be? It may be Gana Mishra Bhakti, but the point is it leads to bhakti. And actually knowledge of Krishna is not necessarily tainted with, it's when it's tainted with a desire for knowledge, where there is still an aspiration to get that knowledge, then it is Gana Mishra Bhakti. But actually the devotee, he has all knowledge of Krishna already. One should not, and in the beginning stage, one should not neglect to understand how Krishna operates in this world. Why? Because we have to understand how to practice Krishna consciousness. We can't simply put our mind to Krishna in the spiritual world immediately. We need to understand what's going on here also. So the point is, if a drop of water, you get a drop of water from the river and you analyze it, that indicates what's in the river itself. Similarly, we know that if we analyze sunlight, we can understand sunlight. How do we experience sunlight, Radhesham? How do we experience sun? How is it to you? Very good. Warm. Two things. First, it's warm, yeah? We feel it. Even if our eyes are closed, say you're chanting your Gayatri. Your eyes are closed. But you can feel the heat, yeah? On your face. And what else do we notice? Someone else, because I know Radhesham knows all this. He knows everything. What else do we notice? How else do we experience it? Light, yeah. So even though we can't see the sun, we see it's getting light, we know the sun is up. Srila Prabhupada gives that example. So light, we therefore know that the sun is very warm, hot, very hot and also very light. Why? Because we analyze the sunlight, we know what is the nature of the sun. Also, if you meet someone, you very often say, I see your father in you. I see your mother in you. So Krishna is, what is he? Bijahang sarva bhutanam. There's another verse as well. Pitaham asya jagato, 9th chapter, verse 17. I'm the father of everyone. So if we've got personality, this is an interesting point. If we've got personality, how is it that the source of our source cannot have personality? It's logical. It must be there. All these features we have. And personhood is such an interesting thing, isn't it? We become fascinated by people more than anything in this world. Interesting characters. Personhood. It's intriguing. And this is what makes Krishna and other people intriguing, interesting. We want to be with them. Why? Because they have some of these opulences, these six opulences. For example, wealth. As soon as we're wealthy, we gain friends. And we notice whenever we're poor and we're in poverty, people are not so interested. That's a fact. Immediately you've got, what is it, the golden rule. He who has gold rules. But Krishna is the richest. The temple in Tirupati, I've got a little bit of a quote about that. The temple is reported to be the richest and most visited place of worship in the world. The temple is visited by about 50,000 to 100,000 pilgrims every day. That's a lot. While on special occasions and festivals like the annual Brahmotsavam, the number of pilgrims shoots up to about 500,000 on a day. I mean, this is big. Making it the most visited holy place in the world. They collect, when you go there, everyone shaves their head, the ladies as well. The daily amount of hair collected is over a ton. The hair thus gathered is sold by temple organizations a few times each year by public auction to international buyers for use in hair extensions and in cosmetics. So if any ladies have got hair extensions, they may have come from Tirupati. Bringing in over $6 million per year to the temple's treasury. So Balaji is extremely wealthy. Krishna is extremely wealthy. But the point is, if a person is wealthy, they become attractive. We're attracted to them. Fame is the second opulence. I may have got them in the wrong order. There may be another order given. Someone, I just read a quote. Fame is what you spend years seeking to achieve, and as soon as you achieve it, you wear sunglasses so that people won't recognize you. Yes, non-devotees, they often find that fame becomes a real burden. They even can't go out their house to buy a loaf of bread or whatever they buy without people recognizing them. And it becomes a real burden. There's no anonymity. They can't hide. Can you imagine being a famous person like that? Everyone knows. But Krishna is quite easy with his fame. He wears it well. No, he definitely doesn't have sunglasses. No, he may have a white umbrella, but no sunglasses. I'm sure there are some temples that put sunglasses on him. And strength. A person's very strong, powerful. You feel good in his presence. Yeah. Sometimes you have a... I remember there's one devotee who's passed away now called Samba. He was very big. And in his presence, you think, yeah, We're safe here. 6 foot 6 tall. And Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Actually, interestingly, there was a very famous strongman who died in January 2010. He was 104 years old. He was knocked over by a car, regrettably, even though, and even at the age of 104, he could still bend coins with his fingers and so on. But he was actually a vegetarian his whole life. So those who criticize the fact that you can't be strong if you're vegetarian, here's just one example. I know it's only one example, but a good example. What was his name? John Rolino. Yeah. But Krishna's even stronger. That's why when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, he used the little finger of his left hand. He was making a point here. Yeah. Generally, when you see the strong men lifting, these Russian guys and so on, they're not lifting with a little finger. So Krishna was making a point by using his little finger. So Krishna's but if a person is very powerful physically, we feel somehow good in his. He's attractive. What to speak of number four, beauty. There was a story I read that there was there was a film recently released called The King's Speech, won some Oscars and so on. But it was about the king who had he had a speech defect. He couldn't speak in public, and somehow he overcame that speech defect, that stammer. He had this terrible stammer. But there was another. His brother was actually featured there, and he, of course, gave up the throne of England just prior to the Second World War because he married a commoner and someone who was a divorcee. And her name was Wallis Simpson, and he had to choose between the throne and between the woman he loved. And he chose the woman he loved and gave up the throne of England. The only king of England who's ever given up the throne, abdicated the throne voluntarily. But she was said to be so beautiful, or so stunning, that when she walked into a restaurant, you could hear the spoons and forks dropping. That was the claim, anyway. So that we talk about stunning beauty, don't we? Stunning. It's just, wow. No. But Krishna's beauty is really stunning. Regarding Krishna's attractive features being ever fresh, again, because Krishna possesses unlimited opulence, it's ever fresh. We never get bored of it. Generally speaking, when we have a relationship in this world, after a while, it begins well. But after a while, we begin to get a little tired of that. Yeah. Isn't it so? You know someone, we fall in love, and it's all great. And then after a while, some of the defects begin to poke their nose through the idea we have of, we see, not perfect. Therefore, we should avoid in our relationships being too familiar. Familiarity should be avoided. Intimacy, but not familiarity. We should be aware of that. But Krishna's not like that. His beauty never wanes. He's ever fresh. There is a statement by Radharani in the Lilita Madhava in which Krishna is compared to the greatest sculptor because he is expert in chiseling at the chastity of women. In other words, although chaste women may follow the rules and regulations of Vedic principles to become ever faithful to their husbands, Krishna is able to break their stone-like chastity with the chisel of his beauty. Most of the girlfriends of Krishna were married, but because Krishna was their friend before their marriage, they could not forget his attractive features. It's interesting. Krishna, before they were married, they had that love for Krishna. So they could never abandon that. And they were always fascinated. His attractive features were always fascinating to them, even after their marriages. I mean, of course, we have to understand this. In the modern context, it may not seem so astounding, but in the more traditional context, where women were expected to be chaste and were chaste, the fact is that even though they were trying to be chaste, still, Krishna's beauty was so powerful, they couldn't forget him. It is glorifying his beauty. Also in Rupa Goswami's Lalita Madhava, it is said, one day Krishna happened to see the shadow or the reflection of his beautiful form reflected on the jeweled foreground. He was looking and he saw his own reflection in the shiny floor. He expressed his feeling, how wonderful it is that I've never seen before such a beautiful form. Although it is my own form, like Radharani, I'm trying to embrace this form and enjoy celestial bliss. And Srila Prabhupada also explains that if you see Krishna when he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's driving the chariot of Arjuna. He must have been, I think Srila Prabhupada mentions, about 125 years old, am I right? You've translated many of the Gitas. Yeah, 100, but still, he looked beautiful. Whereas we're trying, nowadays men as well as ladies, to somehow preserve that beauty. Can you give me some cream to get rid of these wrinkles? You can't print this photograph of me. There's too many wrinkles. It's not a good photo. Somehow or other, we lose that after a while. And we're concerned to keep. But Krishna keeps that beauty. Navayovanam cha. What to speak about learning. If someone's very learned, if they know a lot, or they've got some wisdom, immediately they're attractive, aren't they? A devotee knows a lot of shlokas and can quote them like the waves of the Ganges, the Ganga. Yeah, immediately, very learned. But Krishna spoke the Gita 5,000 years ago, it's still popular. That's a long time. And renunciation, that's also, if we meet someone who's really detached, isn't that also an attractive quality? Particularly if they're not disturbed under any circumstance. They have that, their dhira. Srila Prabhupada was like that, completely unruffled under all, you know, we get ruffled, generally speaking, if we lose our beads or, I mean, just small things can sometimes ruffle us. But that person who's unruffled, even when there's a very fearful situation, it's very attractive quality, actually. Really attractive. So that renunciation is there. Hence, sannyasis are still respected. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Chaitanya, who had a very beautiful wife, a very affectionate mother, very, in a sense, enviable lifestyle, but still he gave it up for the purpose of preaching. He mentions that's real renunciation. Not that I'm a failure in married life. Everything's gone wrong. I've lost my wife, I've lost my wealth, and now I'll become a sannyasi. That's Krishna's renunciation. So these are the qualities to be found in Krishna, and they're unlimited. There's no end to them. It kind of gives another perspective on infinity. Many thinkers have tried to get to grips with infinity. I have a book, you saw it. What's it called? A Short History of Infinity, which I thought was an interesting title. A Short History of Infinity. Man's Quest to Think the Unthinkable. So we tend to think in very much quantitative terms about infinity. And there are many mathematicians. And the author in this book actually expresses his opinion that because some of these mathematicians went mad, and a good number of them did, I'm trying to remember their names. Gödel, was it? Gödel and others. I'm trying to remember their names. His opinion was actually they went mad because they were trying to grasp infinity. So, but here's another kind of perspective on infinity, and that is that the supreme absolute truth, which those who are trying to become Jnanavan are seeking, is not just quantity, but quality, opulence. Therefore, when one actually appreciates the opulence of Krishna, one becomes overwhelmed with that. Otherwise, if one tries to quantify everything in terms of numbers, it's a very risky path, actually. But Krishna is unlimited in everything. Therefore, when we actually have a relationship with Krishna, we're never bored of that relationship. There are newer and newer insights and so on, and sources of inspiration with that person. And coming back to the verse here, Srila Prabhupada resolves this tension by making it clear that although the word Bhagavan can only apply really to God, but if we understand the meaning, he also explains that there's only two uses, either God or that person who carries Bhagavan in his or her heart. Therefore, the real test is if we meet a guru or a holy man who calls himself Bhagavan, we have to find out, is he carrying Krishna in his heart or not? Or is he simply imitating the Supreme Personality of God? So it's explained here in the verse, Bhagavan Narado Muni Bhagavat Yutama Shloke Vishtatma Bravin Bravin Ripan. And the translation of that, Bhagavan Narada Muni Bhagavati Uttama Shloka, possessing excellent renown, Avishta, absorbed, Atma means mind. So one whose mind is absorbed in that Supreme Person is also carrying that person within his heart. And because he's carrying Krishna, therefore he's carrying all opulence, and he can be called Bhagavan. So we really need to, if a guru or swami or whatever is called Bhagavan, we need to test, are they carrying Krishna in their heart? If not, they are, as Srila Prabhupada calls them, a rascal or an imposter. Mm-hmm. So, questions or comments? Yes. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada gives the example, and he explains that the relationship between both husband and wife and between the spiritual master, the disciple and the spiritual master, should be intimate but not familiar. And it's an interesting principle of intimacy without familiarity. Familiarity breeds contempt, is the general proverb. So one should, in other words, there always needs to be that respect. Therefore, one shouldn't try and get too close to the spiritual master. Or one should, one must have an intimate relationship based on love and service, but one should be very careful about being too close, or asking questions that are not appropriate, for example, of the spiritual master. One should not... It's quite a difficult one to grasp, isn't it? Intimacy without familiarity. Even a husband and wife, and it's explained, I think, with Kardamom Muni and Devahuti in that part of the Bhagavatam, there are certain ways that actually that one avoids that familiarity. For example, one should be dressed nicely in front of the wife, and should present herself nicely before the husband. Nicely dressed. Not that when I go out, I'm nicely dressed, and when my husband's around at home, I dress sloppily. which is the can easily happen. But there's a sense of respect, because from respect, love grows. Respect and appreciation. All the other rasas grow. The madhurya is the culmination. So there must be respect, there must be service, there must be friendship. Then there can be love on the madhurya level. So the respect must be there. And that respect is preserved by avoiding familiarity. So with the spiritual master, one also has to always respect his position. Otherwise, if one becomes too close, one may start to see him in more material terms. And of course, Rupa Goswami explains there may be some faults, just like the Ganga, the river has foam, mud, but still it's sacred. So the danger is we start to see the faults and then we start to criticize and then our spiritual life is in great danger. After all, the spiritual master is Jiva, is not the Supreme Person, but is dedicated to Krishna. That's the difference. So intimacy without familiarity, very important principle. Therefore, etiquette must be maintained. Vaishnava etiquette, very important. Not very popular these days. Generally speaking, in society, we're not too happy with following authority. Often because the authorities are not qualified. But then the whole social structure breaks down. The universe is hierarchical. Krishna is God. Not that we start claiming human rights. Krishna, I have a right to this, I have a right to that. He's God. Krishna wants to finish you off. He just has to think it, you're finished. What about my human rights? I'll take you to the European Court of Human Rights. That's not Ishvara, actually. But of course, fortunately, Krishna's all loving. That's important. But we have to maintain some respect for authority because this universe is hierarchical. It's like that. You've got different hierarchy of living beings. Even if you follow Darwin's theory, it's hierarchical. You can't deny it. So Krishna has authority. So we need to keep that respect between, and it's even that hierarchy, but that hierarchy is based on respect for everyone. One must respect the living being within every living creature. When one sees that Pandita Samadarshana, then he respects everyone. He respects a dog. Because we see, when we see a dog, we see there's a living, don't we? We see a living being there. That's a fact. As devotees, we know that. He may be in a dog's body. We may not let him in the temple. We shouldn't let him in the temple or on the Bhakta program. But we know the living entity is there. Therefore, respect must be there. So there's hierarchy, but there's also spiritual equality. The two must be kept in balance. So intimacy without familiarity, a very, very important point there. Quickly, and we'll move on. Then you have to protect, yeah. Physically it may be difficult. Then one has to be careful to maintain that respect in one's mind. And that intimacy comes through service. Appreciation, then service. If we keep that mood of service, whether it's husband and wife, whether it's brahmacharis living in the ashram, if we keep that mood of service, then we will be protected. Yeah, it's always... That is intimacy with the spiritual master. It's not so much the Vapu, it's the Vani. Do I understand the heart of my spiritual master? Do I understand what he really wants? That's love. You know what a person wants. Just keep that service attitude. Does that help? It's hard sometimes, isn't it, when you're thrown together in the ashram by destiny. And you, yeah. But then also, England, with all thy faults, I love thee still. It means you recognize, you know a person's got faults, but you love them anyway. And Krishna's got faults. He abandons those who love him sometimes. There's plenty of room. He left Vrindavan. He went away. There's plenty of room to. And sometimes the gopis, they criticize Krishna like that. But actually they love him. Therefore, when we are intimate, we should also reveal things, that we should talk about Krishna together. Because when we speak to devotees and the devotees reveal their hearts, we start to appreciate, wow, they're actually Muni. They're thoughtful. And their thoughts are directed to Krishna. And if we don't actually get that intimate connection, sometimes when we have that dialogue with devotees, we realize how deep and profound they actually are. Mm-hmm. So intimacy doesn't always mean, Prabhu, I'm having a problem, I'm having that problem. That may be there. We have to overcome the challenges. But also, we need to look at not just the problems, but also some of those very positive aspects of devotees. Mm-hmm. Very, very important. It is very, my own personal experience, very rewarding to actually start to discuss with devotees their spiritual life on a very positive level. And we see then that there is something wonderful that makes them tick, that will help us keep our appreciation for devotees. Okay, you've got to be really quick, and I'm going to be 30 seconds. Godel, and yeah. Yeah, that's true. We're infinitesimal in a sense, but we're also eternal. Yeah. That's how we should try and understand infinity. Understand our eternal nature. Yeah. And try and understand that in relationship to the unlimited. Otherwise, if we just think about numbers, we'll go crazy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.